I'm Tiffany Shepis, and before we get into the episode, I want to tell you about Fangoria magazine. With your subscription, you'll get a new Fangoria sent straight to your door every quarter. Once you open up that envelope, you'll find that Fango is now a beautiful, deluxe, 100-page deep dive into every aspect of horror that you love. Each issue includes set visits from the latest movies, your favorite classics, and the insight you've come to expect from the world's best horror and cult film magazine. And you'll never find these articles online. It's analog. Print only. Go to Fangoria.com and use promo code Friday for 15% off your first year of Fang. And I want to tell you about Shudder. Shudder has the largest, fastest growing, human curated selection of thrilling and dangerous entertainment. It truly is the Netflix of horror. There are new spine tingling thrillers, shocking horrors, and edgier seat suspense added every week. With Shudder, you have unlimited access to stream ad free on all your favorite devices. Sign up today on Shudder.com.
Fangoria presents Casualty Friday.
You are listening to Casualty Friday. I'm Kane Hodder.
I'm Felissa Rose.
And hey, I'm Tiffany Shepis.
Now, today our topic is the beyond. Now, we are joined with a friend of ours that we've all worked with before, Bill Moseley.
Bill Moseley.
Yay, Bill Moseley in the house.
Top Otis, Mr. Suitcase Moseley is in the house.
Mr. Suitcase.
A very famous, I mean, everyone knows it, little movie that we were in together called Homesick, written and directed by the famous Adam Wingard.
Yep.
And Evan Katz.
And Evan Katz, right. And then and they co-directed.
They did. They co-directed it, and we went out there. And then,
we were down there in Alabama. Maybe, where was it? Was it?
Birmingham.
Maybe it was Birmingham or Monkey Town, aka Montgomery.
Oh,
which
yes.
is yeah. I mean, that's what the truckers call it.
Monkey Town.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow. Yeah.
And a small, really cool movie. But it was their first film, and Bill and I got to go and play on it. He played the big bad, and I was just kind of a bitchy, horrible, slutty girl who gets killed. But you could see in those two guys that they were going to become something even on that movie.
What was it about them on that set that gave you that idea?
You mean them, or are you talking about me?
Well, I was certain Moseley was going to become something. No.
You can see.
They were young kids, but they had such an excitement for the genre, and they were so thrilled to have Bill there, and I mean, everybody was. And I thought, wow, like, these guys are going to, you know, they're working with such a small budget, and they're pulling, like, strings. And we were shooting in somebody's mom's kitchen. She was making spaghetti dinner for us at night. Yet I was like, I think they're going to grow up and do something great. And, well, they both have giant careers now.
They do. And Tommy Tolles was in there, too.
Tommy Tolles was in there.
Did a great job.
Aw, he did a great job.
Yep.
But before Homesick, you know, you're super well-known for lots of projects, but, I mean, the one all of our fans, I think, know is Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2.
Dog Will Hunt. Yeah.
Was that a Moseley line, or was that scripted?
That was scripted.
Oh.
The Moseley line was, "Lick my plate, you dog dick."
You was came up with that?
Oh, yeah, totally in the moment. Yep, in the radio station.
Oh, my God.
As I tap my plate in the radio station. Hey, lick my plate.
That's
amazing. You know, and for some reason, you know, because when I was a kid, we had the Clean Plate Club, which meant that we were obligated to eat all of my mother's cooking and leave a clean plate because children were starving somewhere.
Sure.
Europe or something. And because that was, you know, that was that World War II mentality, you know, clean your plate. So it was the Clean Plate Club. And dog dick, I don't know where that came from. No, maybe.
Did you think, you know, about we had that a dog time, or did it come just spontaneously?
It came in the moment. No,
really?
Totally
the
in
whole
the moment.
Thing.
Yeah.
Dog
lick
dick.
My plate, you dog dick.
And when you did everyone on set know instantly, like, that's it. Like, that's, like, going to be this dude's catchphrase. Or
I don't know what they were thinking. I know that Kit Carson, you know, RIP, our the screenwriter, was there, like, writing everything down that we said on the set, and then saying, you know, here's the draft of the script. Wow. It was interesting. So you know, so somehow, you know, some of those lines get, you know, kind of blurred in terms of authorship, but a lot of it was improvised, which actually was great. It was like a happy mayhem on the set.
And a lot of us have been on projects where they're like, you know, just go ahead and do your thing. And we're sometimes like,
right.
Really? Like, how about you do your job and write the script? But there is that happy medium, right? Like great yeah. script, and then you can add on what you want.
Well, if you're into it, you know what happens, those ideas come. And I remember when Kane and I did Old 37.
I talked about it.
Dance like a chicken.
And yeah, making me dance like a chicken. I loved it.
That's great.
It totally shocked me, but I went along with it, and it made the whole scene.
It was awesome.
And if you remember, you did that on like the last take. We already had a take of what was scripted.
Right.
And then you did that. So is that what you did with Lick My Plate also?
No, that just came out.
That was just...
that just was one and done.
Oh, so oh, there yeah. was no previous take.
I don't think so. I mean, that was 30, almost 33 years ago. But yeah, I don't think so.
Have you ever had somebody like get thrown by you throwing something like that out and they didn't go with it?
Not that they communicated. I mean, right. maybe. And I do remember at the end of Halloween, what was it? Halloween? No, it wasn't Halloween 2. It was Halloween 1. There was a, I came in with Sid and Sid Haig and Leslie Easterbrook, and Rob brought us in for some, extra shots or whatever. And one of them was Tommy Tolles again, Leslie Aww. Easterbrook. And I think a stunt guy and I were like four guards at the insane asylum. And that was when Michael Myers is getting moved on Halloween. And so Leslie Easterbrook had the last line, like Halloween, or something like, oh my gosh, Halloween. And that's when, and I jumped, because she had scripted, her last line was the scripted line of, Halloween. And then I said, trick or treat, baby. And that, I jumped in on that.
Leave to Bill to steal the final line.
I stole it.
Leslie was like, she said it again.
Easterbrook was like, trick never or treat, again.
No, she just said it again. Halloween. And
it just keeps going back and forth.
Yeah. Oh, man. So, I'm sorry, Leslie. I saw her the other night at the Three from Hell.
She's awesome.
Yeah, red carpet.
She looks great. Like, yeah, she's another one as like a painting in the closet. Like, how does that lady get better and better looking? And she'll get the last laugh. We'll have
like
her
a
on as a guest.
In the closet. What is that?
Painting in the closet.
Yeah,
isn't that like an old time phrase where you have a painting
like Dorian
in the closet?
Gray
Dorian
or
Gray.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like,
why in the
keeps
closet?
You young.
That's where they
because
had
you
it.
Hide it.
Dorian Gray had his painting. Come on. Really?
Yeah, I guess.
Anyway, so after Chainsaw, and it was like coming out, did you guys know instantly that this was going to be received the way it was from genre fans, or did that take a minute?
I really had no concept of it personally. I mean, others may have thought that, but I just was happy to come up with some lines, earn the affection, if not the respect of Toby Hooper, our director, and generally had a great time. I just had a ball doing it.
Is that what led you fast forwarding to meet with Rob Zombie to be on his movies, or was
it did by
he's such a fan, right?
It was a long road because that was 1986, and I met Rob October of 99, so that was 13 years later.
Lucky.
And
13.
In that time, my pregnant girlfriend at the time, Lisa, and I moved from New York to Los Angeles. Because I think it was Kit Carson's agent who just offhandedly said to me, you're pretty good at this on the set of Chainsaw 2. She said, you're pretty good at this. You ought to come to Hollywood. And of course, that's all I needed. Stupid me.
Rip up that Yale degree.
Well, why did you feel here I come. As though you wouldn't want to pursue a career after 2? Was that, I know you had said you were an English major. So what were you thinking in terms of career?
Well, here's
at that time?
I was living in New York City at the time. After I graduated from college with an English major, I went first to Boston and worked there as a copywriter in a small ad agency. Left there, worked for a while on a presidential campaign of Frank Church from Idaho. And then left there and ended up in New York City, where I worked as a writer. I was the editor-in-chief of CB Bible Magazine, which was a 32-page like newspaper, like a rag, basically, dedicated to the wide, weird world of Citizens Band Radio.
Whoa.
And my editorial crusade, speaking, I know we're going to talk about some weird things later, but my editorial crusade was all about mysterious cattle mutilations.
What?
Because this was back in 1976 when the mutes were all over the West, the Western United States. So I was a big mute guy. I was totally into it. I got a lot of pictures and articles and very cool.
I don't know
and
what that is.
That's what led me into my showbiz career.
What is the mutes?
The mutes are the mutilated cows.
Oh, that's
they,
what,
they
oh,
would
that's
find like everywhere yeah. and never have an explanation for it.
Yeah,
what?
Their blood. They would have. They would have their udders, their tongues, their eyeballs would be surgically removed. The blood would be drained.
Like surgically, like nicely, or was
surgically,
this,
like as though it were some kind of, you know, laser surgery. I mean,
what?
You know, not just that. In other words, not a hack
it
job.
It wasn't just some
it wasn't an animal.
Kid.
It wasn't, you know, some rustler like hacking off some.
In
part
what
of the
area
body
of the
part.
Country was this?
Mostly in the well, the cattle producing states. So Wyoming, Mexico, Colorado, Montana.
So widespread.
Yeah, actually, but they're also in New Hampshire, I think, was the first known mutilated animal. That was Skippy, the horse. I think it was in Appaloosa. I'm laughing because I didn't know if it was a Pinto or an Appaloosa, but I think it was an Appaloosa.
Oh,
Skippy. Anyway, so that's what ended up getting me into the Screen Actors Guild. Those mutilations. I wrote a mutilated cow.
Wait, how did that?
Yeah.
Well, I was looking. I was living in New York City. It was the early mid '80s, and I was looking at the New York Post. And I was looking at page six, my favorite part of the New York Post, which is all the gossip and stuff.
Trash, yeah.
Trashy gossip, and there was a little piece about a company called Alive Entertainment that was going to do this movie about cattle mutilations called Cows. And it was supposed to be directed by Alan Rudolph, who had done, you know, a lot of very cool movies. And then there was the name of the producer of Alive Entertainment. So I just thought, holy shit. So I cut that article out. I called up Alive Entertainment. And Carolyn Pfeiffer was the producer. And I asked to speak to her. And I got through to her and I said, yes, I'm Bill Moseley. I live in New York City. I know a lot about cattle mutilations. And she went, oh, that's great. She said,
thank you for calling.
She said, do you happen to have any pictures? And I said, I have a bunch of 8x10s of mutilated cows. And she said, well, you know, we need those for the town hall scene in our movie. But we don't have much money, meaning she thought I was going to try to, you know, soak her for some dough. Some mute money. And I said, well, you know, actually, I want to get into the Screen Actors Guild.
So you already
have
designs
on that. So I'd be happy to swap it out. And she said, well, we can do something about that.
What? Oh.
So the production started in New York City. It was Robert Urich,
wow.
Dan Tanna from the old TV show, RIP also. And anyway, the scene was I'm a cab driver. Driving him to wherever he's going to, you know, whatever he's doing in the script. And he says, and I say, that'll be $4.75. And then he gives me a five and says, keep the change. And I go, thanks, bud. So that was my screen debut.
Oh,
and that got you
into
SAG.
And that got me into SAG. And I remember I was invited to the premiere. It was retitled Endangered Species. And so I was invited to the premiere, and I remember bringing a couple of friends of mine and waiting for my big moment, my screen debut.
Oh,
and
no.
You know, the movie starts to roll, and up comes the cab, and I'm just like, holy shit, there I am! I'm squeezing my friend's hands, and I hear this voice, this kind of weird Brooklyn voice, going, "Hey, that'll be $4.75."
No.
And I'm like, wait a minute, that's not me. And then immediately my head is so frightened and weird, it skips ahead to maybe they didn't change the second line. And of course, you know, the second line comes literally bing, bing, bing right after.
Yeah, because
so then he goes, oh, keep the change. And I go, hey, thanks, Mac, you know, or whatever it is. And I'm going, oh, I'm devastated.
That would have been. We talked about this yesterday.
They have dubbed me. And I was mortified. But it did get me into the Screen Actors Guild. Well, so you know, even though it's a mutilated cow, it still has a bite. So,
It was still you on the screen.
Yeah, it was still me.
So
yeah.
A little strange.
Wait, so they had your shot? I thought
they had everything about me except they dubbed my voice.
I just can't picture you with that New York voice.
No.
475 bud.
Yeah, because they saved the money on flying me, you know, all the way to Los Angeles to do ADR, et cetera, et cetera.
You then, right after that, went to LA. Was it like immediate?
No, I did not go to LA. I went back to my apartment and cried for 3 days. But no, it was later that then I, still living in New York, I went to work one summer on a dude ranch in Wyoming.
You have like an obsession with these farm animals.
Yeah, well, I'm a Midwestern guy. So I was out working on the Boxar Ranch in Cora, Wyoming, outside of Green River. And one day I was just they call him a rosin jaw, basically, a handy, guy around that, just a cowboy kicking turds around the ranch.
Kicking turds.
And, so I was digging holes, for fence posts,
bodies,
and, chopping wood, whatever they needed, the lowest, kind of the low man on the totem. And I was working with a kid named John Wright. And John was from Geneseo, Illinois. He was the adopted son of a couple that owned a funeral parlor. And they had sent he was maybe 15, and they sent him out, his parents had sent him out to the ranch to, work him, make a man of him. Maybe he was starting to stray a little bit. So they wanted to really, toughen him up. So, and he and the two of us were working together, real Mutt and Jeff. And he was a sugar freak. And so he would pound sugar, like sugar frosted flakes and sugar pops and popsicles, fudgesicles. He would drink the bug juice, he was always pounding the sugar. And when we would do manual labor under the hot Wyoming summer sun, he would go into what I called sugar deliriums. And he would start to sweat, and the sugar would, I guess, maybe rattle his brain, and he would start to speak in tongues.
Shut up.
He would do radio voices. He would start singing jingles and top 40 radio tunes and do
this
cartoon
guy
characters.
Invest.
Now, he was like a nut. And basically, I wanted to hit him on the head with a shovel, but, you can't do that. And, you could, I guess, but you do get in trouble. Anyway, so he was like, he would blather on. And one day, we were working together, side by side, chopping something or digging a hole. And he's in his sugar deliriums. He's doing like, Cap'n Crunch, Cap'n Crunch. And all of a sudden, he goes, Texas Chainsaw Manicure. And then goes back into his blather. And I heard it. Usually I turn a deaf ear to the guy, but then it's like, whoa. And I suddenly saw it. It was an epiphany. And I went back after we were done. I went back to the bunkhouse and pulled out a notebook and wrote out a 5-minute scenario called the Texas Chainsaw Manicure. And I got back to New York after my summer stint on the ranch and gathered some friends. We took over, we went to Staten Island and took over a beauty parlor called Sonia's Hair Fashions.
Yes.
And went out there and on a Sunday shot the Texas Chainsaw Manicure. And basically the story is a woman goes to a beauty parlor, gets her hair done, and she's sitting under the dryer and a beautician comes up and says, "You want anything else?" And she goes, "Yes, I think I'll have a manicure." So the beautician calls to the back of the shop, "Manicure." And you hear this saw starting and the silver door slides open, and out comes Leatherface from the back of the shop. And he's with his big chainsaw and he comes up to the woman who's screaming, but pinned under the dryer. And he starts sawing on her hands and she's screaming and he's sawing and she screams and she passes out. And then, we cut to the beautician kind of waking her up, slapping her cheek. And she's like, passed out under the hair dryer. And she goes, no. She looks and she's got a fabulous manicure.
That's so great.
And wow. So then she goes out to show her husband waiting in the pickup truck. What a fabulous manicure. She goes, "Look, honey, I got the best manicure ever." And I gave myself a cameo as her husband, dressed and made up as the hitchhiker from the original Chainsaw. And she shows me her manicure. And I go, hey, that's great, honey. We should celebrate with some head cheese. And I had gone out and actually bought a slab of head cheese, which doesn't really look that dramatic. It kind of looks like bologna or something. Yeah. But it's, you know, if you know what goes into it, you'll know that it's pretty different than bologna. Well, maybe not that much.
Probably
different.
The same.
But it's basically scrotum, eyeballs. You know, it's all the non, all the other parts.
Sounds the other delicious. Parts that don't go in.
Yeah. Just delicious.
Yeah, yeah, there's socket gel gelatin.
It's what we order here for lunch at Fangoria Podcast Network.
And so, and in one take, I actually licked the head cheese, which I do regret. But anyway, so we, you know, made this little short, and I tried to sell it to Saturday Night Live. There was a comedy show called Fridays at the time.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Nobody wanted it. You know, it was either too long. It was on videotape. It was this. It didn't have our stars in it, blah, blah, blah. So I couldn't sell it. So I went to work as a waiter just to try to pay back Broadway Video, which was Lorne Michaels' Saturday Night Live production company. That's where we, you know, put it all together and did the editing. And they would call me at like 7 a.m. dunning me for like, you know, where's the money? And that's when I knew that producing was not for me. You're the one they call, right? You're the one they call when they're looking for the dough. And so anyway, so I was happy and, you know, as a waiter, and I got a gig from Omni Magazine, one of my big employers, to fly out on a junket to Los Angeles to cover the making of 2010, the Space Odyssey sequel. So I flew out, all expenses paid. I brought a copy of The Manicure. Of course, back then it was VHS. Yeah. And it was 1984, I think. And I went out to dinner with a buddy of mine who by then was already a successful screenwriter. He was a high school classmate. And he and his partner had written Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Doc Hollywood. So they were the hot writers. His name is Peter Seaman. And
I'm sorry.
I'm kidding you.
Sorry, we have to laugh. We're juvenile.
Because we're 12.
Everybody does.
Yeah, we're very immature.
And anyway, of the partnership, Seaman and Price. And Jeffrey Price was his partner. And I went out to Pete and Nini, his wife's house, and brought along the manicure just to amuse them. And I showed him the manicure after dinner. You know, we laughed, you know, and Pete said, "This is great. I love this." He said, "Why don't you give me a copy of it? Because my partner and I have an office right across the hall at Paramount from Toby Hooper, the director of the original Chainsaw."
Wow.
And so I said, "You know, sure, what the heck?" And so hoping that if Toby even saw it, that he would like it, at least that would make it a little bit easier for me. Like, you know, I would feel better about being a waiter and being completely broke and destitute and sad and kicked to the curb. So my buddy did. He walked it across the hall. He gave it to Toby Hooper. Toby Hooper watched it, which was, I later found out, which was great. He then called in his producing partner, Steven Spielberg, because they were there on Poltergeist.
Wow.
And Steven loved it. And they loved the manicure and especially loved me as my hitchhiker cameo. And Pete got me Toby's home number. Told me to call in like, you know, 10 days. I'd gotten back to New York by then. I called up Toby and I identified myself as the guy that did the manicure. And he said, "Well, that's great, Bill. Yeah, I love the manicure. Now, who was the one that played, who was the one that played the hitchhiker?" I said, "Well, that was me, Toby." And he goes, "Well, hell, if I ever do a sequel, I'll keep you in mind." I was like, wow, that's awesome. So, you know, he said, "Stay in touch," and gave me an address. So I, you know, sent him a postcard and never heard another word. And 2 years went by. So it was 84 to 86. And in 86, one night, I've kind of made it, I think I've added a little to the history, but I think it was it was right around the time when I had answered a casting call in Backstage, which was a casting kind of newspaper rag in New York. And there was some kind of a Backstage casting call for a dead body. It was like an NYU student film.
My alma mater.
And I went down to New York. I went down to the lower, you know, whatever, Greenwich Village or whatever it is. and to answer the call. It was a four-story walk-up. And that was back when I was smoking a bunch of cigarettes. And so I didn't get the job. You know, I got there and they said, okay, just lie down and just be a dead body. And I'm lying on the floor and my chest is heaving. They're going, dude, you know, you're fucking dead.
You're dead.
So, I mean, that was kind of where my career was at, you know. You can't get hired as the dead body. For a student film, you suck.
You got real problems.
Yeah, you got to get there.
I have those four flights.
And anyway, I got this call and shortly thereafter, and it was, I could tell it was long distance because back then when you had a long distance call on a regular phone, it sizzled a bit. So
I mean, it wasn't like the switchboard operator. No, I'll patch you through.
No, it wasn't that long ago. Yeah, right. But it was this guy saying his name was Kit Carson, and he wanted to get my address to send me a copy of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 screenplay. And I toyed with the idea of like, who is this really? It felt like I was getting punked. But I gave him my address because I could tell from the sizzle it was long distance. So I got this script in the mail. I read it. I loved it. I was told to keep an eye on the part of Chop Top. Although I think at the time it was maybe called Platehead because that was the original character name, but there was a conflict with the Masters of the Universe character or whatever. So it became Chop Top. And I told him I loved the screenplay and everything. I thought it was funny and great. And he said, oh, that's wonderful. Well, you'll be hearing from us. And I'm thinking, okay, what does that mean? Yeah. And then the next couple of days, I got a call from the Canon Films legal department saying, do you have an agent or do you want to negotiate the contract by yourself? And I had met I had met an agent at a party a couple of months earlier. And so I called her up. Her name was Risa Shapiro at William Morris. And I said, would you remember me from the party? She said, oh, yeah. You know, I said, would you negotiate a contract for me? She said, sure.
You're handing me a job?
Yeah, here you go.
Yeah. So she called him up. And then she called me back and said, well, I've got some good news and some bad news. And I said, well, let's start with the good news. The good news is they want you for this part, this Chop Top character in this movie, Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And I said, great. I mean, holy shit. And I said, well, what's the bad news? Well, the bad news is they're only going to pay you scale. And at the time, as a freelance writer, I was making, on an average, maybe $250 a week.
Yeah.
and that was on a good week. And I said, well, geez, how much is scale? She said, well, I don't know. I think it's $1,600, $1,700 a week. I went, oh, that's not so bad after.
He's not
well,
OT.
Yeah, she like, said, well, there's also, you know, they want you, because there's a plate and some makeup and stuff, they want you to shave your head. And I went, okay. And she said, well, so I told him that you know, being a working actor, that you would not be able to work for 6 months. So they've agreed to, while your hair grows back, so they've agreed to pay you $5,000 to shave your head. I was like, oh, my God, that's awesome.
She's like, isn't that shitty?
This is the worst deal ever. I'm so sorry, Bill.
Horrible.
So that's a long way of telling you how I got into the business. Yeah.
Incredible.
As long as we've known each other, I never knew all of that. That is amazing.
That's tremendous.
And by the time you did Chop Top, you hadn't done much.
No.
Then. So how did you presume to feel that you could ad lib already?
Well, I was too stupid to even know I was presuming.
I
was new at this. I basically just followed in the footsteps of Ed Neal, the great Ed Neal, who played
Ed Neal,
the hitchhiker, and he did such an amazing job, and it really blew my mind when I saw the original Chainsaw. Really blew my mind. It blew my mind so much that for 8 years I kept trying to see it in different theaters just to try to get over my fear of it. I mean, it really freaked me out.
That's amazing. I always say it's my favorite film. It's my favorite horror movie. And I think the performances are so electric. And Marilyn Burns, to me, I was young when it came out and I felt like the movie seemed real. Like authentically, so authentically scary, gritty, you know, terrifying.
It's almost like a documentary.
Because of that, oh my gosh.
I think it was a long time before I watched that. Like I was of the like Nightmare on Elm Street camp. We've talked about that. Like that's what I grew up watching. And then I think it was very long time before I watched Chainsaw, even though I was a big horror fan, because I remember seeing like the trailer and I was like, ugh. It just looks
dirty.
Like,
it felt dirty.
Yeah, it felt like real, dirty. Like snuff film.
That
like,
and Last House on the Left. I cite those two as the films that I love so much, but feel very authentic and documentary.
It felt too real. Like I like the campier Freddy Krueger.
Oh, I like the real. Yeah. I love that realism. And Ed Neal's performance is just magic.
And not to mention that Gunner was really the first silent, masked, iconic killer.
Yep.
And so he had nobody else to compare to or to glean from, like right. things that he may have liked. So he was like the pioneer of those of us that play that kind of character. And he was, I don't know if he ended up doing the dance himself, the chainsaw dance, coming up with it. Or
I'll bet he did. Because yeah, I don't think they had the budget for anybody else.
Oh, no, like a choreographer.
I'm just saying, come up with the idea of it.
Oh,
or
maybe.
If it was, think,
although that'd be hilarious. Like, bring in the ballet choreographer.
You know, and may he rest in peace, which brings us to, is he here with us?
Well. Gunner here with us?
Are we Gunny. Believing? Do you believe in Gunny. That? Do you believe there is an afterlife?
A Gunner after Gunner
no,
after
I just
Gunner
think in afterlife. General, like because I've gone to see mediums with people who've passed in my life. And speaking of Gunner, we all love Gunner. We all knew Gunner. He passed, sadly.
Yep.
And now this is bringing up a very
I don't
good.
I think people just float around here. I think there'd be a lot of people you'd run into all the time. Like, I think we'd always be like, oh, shit, there's another ghost. Well, oh, there's another ghost.
So
like,
so for you, a ghost is a physical entity where you actually would kind of bump into it?
I don't know.
I think it's energy. That's how I see it. How do you?
I kind of feel like Tiffany the same. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's I often feel like people that are in despair or depression after losing a loved one kind of grasp onto something like that to ease their pain or something. I don't know that I just don't know if I really feel
yeah.
I don't know. I think it would be fun. I do remember one time I was doing a movie called Blood Night, and we were in northern New Jersey. It was December of a couple of years ago, and we were in at an abandoned asylum or mental hospital, and it was abandoned because of a lot of asbestos, like a lot of places. So it was left. Everybody kind of got up and left. So there were lots of records all over the floor. There were, desks and chairs and everything. And we were shooting our movie there. And I had a little time between scenes. And so I just thought, you know what, I'm going to check out. Cause they were saying that, ward number 9 is haunted, and all this kind of stuff. So I thought I'm going to check it out. So there were some stairs that went down into a basement. It was all very dark. There was no lighting in the asylum. So it was basically a bunch of lanterns. And I went downstairs into a dark basement tunnel and just stood there kind of, not really challenging, but saying, look, if there's some kind of spooky entity here, please,
show yourself.
Show yourself. Exactly. Sure. Just, cause I'm, from the Midwest. So, it's kind of show me. And I stood down there, and I think I really couldn't tell if anything was coming at me, but I think I might have just scared myself because it was pretty fucking scary.
But you didn't physically see anything.
No,
you just had a bad
sense. No, nothing physical, no, sounds or sights. But
like we talked about like that.
Just that
like,
kind of scary sense of like, God, there could be
like
something.
There's something here, like a weird
like a heavy
smell,
energy,
like a cold feeling.
Could have been. My husband doesn't believe in any of it. And he's a musician. He was on tour and they were on the bus driving. He was in a deep sleep and he turned and he saw something and it flipped him out. He definitely saw a ghost. He felt something. And once they got to their destination, the bus driver told them the driver had died on that bus. And he just it flipped him out. So, I mean, I don't know. Betty, everybody,
you think,
has,
you know,
interesting...
who gives a fuck about a driver's ghost? I mean, it's not an important ghost, is what I'm saying. It's not like the ghost of the, you know, the Queen or like some, you know, like John Wilkes Booth. I mean, like, some driver dies on a bus and he's a ghost. Like, fuck that.
No, that
well, that's also true.
If like, he died on that, I mean, have you ever been, people say if someone dies in the house, you know, you might hear sounds or the toilet flushing.
But I've never, like, yeah, I've stayed
especially
in
if they had
so
constipation.
Bad, many creepy places. And I have, like, you have challenged it and have walked around by myself. And I'm like, all right, I'm open. I'm here. Show me. And, like, I get nothing.
Me too.
Not one thing. Like, and yeah, I've gotten, like, the cold, weird feeling. But that's the same feeling I get just sitting in my house when no one's home. You're like, oh, shit, it's kind of empty in here.
Right. Right. And, you know, with Hollywood Ghost Hunters,
Rick, that's right.
My group. Yeah. I've been to all the famous locations, and I always do what you did. I always go off by myself. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Never anything at all. Come on. I mean,
Well, and so I've asked like a bunch of like big time ghost hunter friends and like, you know, that are really into it. And they're like, well, you can't bring your EMF detectors in here because there's too many people. I'm like, well, why? Like, why can't there be fucking ghosts at Disney World? Like, why aren't they all over the... Why are they only alone in the creepy abandoned...
Yeah, all the children that were crushed, you know, that never spoke about.
All of those children's dreams.
It's a small world.
Why are small world?
Why are they just always alone and like, trapped in a mirror? Right. Like, if you're a ghost, then you could go anywhere.
Places where people have died and they...
Just can't leave?
You know, I've never really experienced it myself. I've been told in certain locations that I filmed at, there are these thoughts, perhaps. I'm not sure. I've been to a medium myself. I had someone pass away in my life, and I wanted to experiment. And this woman was, she didn't know me at all. And she certainly had a lot of information about the person who passed on. And I thought it was quite interesting. I mean, I'm open. I'll leave it at that.
Certainly okay.
I believe I'm, you know, just kind of a person who is open to a lot of things.
Because, like, I would like it to be because for a comfort, I mean, we're all parents, like a comfortability to go, all right, this isn't just it. Like, oh, this was the last thing. Me and Bill, I just saw Bill. That's the end.
Yeah.
Like, that you're going to have something else that you could come down and visit people or whatever. That'd be awesome. I just don't know if that's accurate.
I always describe myself as an open-minded skeptic.
That's good. That's
okay, I like that.
I like that too.
Mostly skeptical, OMS. But I'm not saying it's impossible. Open what?
OMS.
OMS.
Yeah, OMS. I'm an open-minded optimist. Okay. OMO.
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 Yeah, Omo and Ohms.
Well, all right, so but ghosts.
That could be a new series.
Usually we're Dumb and Dumber, but today will be
it could be a new TV series.
So, ghosts, fine. What about something like aliens?
All right, yes. Let's jump onto that.
Let's jump onto the aliens. Yeah. Because I kind of think an alien thing came down, had sex with something like a bear, and out came us. Like
I buy that.
I'm totally serious.
Especially if it's a bear.
Yeah, it's gonna be a bear. It's gonna be something
people think that bears are related to dogs. Bears are related to pigs. I mean, that's why they call it a sow and a boar.
Yeah,
the female and the male bear, sow and a boar.
Really?
They're pigs.
They're pigs.
Huh.
And pigs are people too.
And pigs are super smart.
That's an old corn bug song.
Bears are super smart.
Yeah, they are.
So you believe in aliens?
I kind of feel
they're fucking aliens.
There's fucking it. I think we're the alien, truly.
And check her out. Whoa.
Check out the flippers on her.
Look at that bear. Did you see the way she swatted that salmon out of the stream? Man, I gotta get some of that.
I gotta fuck that.
What a huntress. The scales on
love
her.
Love them claws.
Ohms. Beep, beep, beep.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there's something. I think we'd be crazy. There's all these places that we haven't even been able to get to yet. There's got to be some shit on there. There's got to be.
It is pretty hard to imagine that this is the only
life force, life energy,
planet, or for whatever term you want to use, that would have life on it. But I don't know. I feel almost the same way as with ghosts.
I think Bill knows the answer. Bill.
Well, I'm thinking that, you know, I've been thinking a lot about plastic pollution, which is everywhere and getting worse by the day. And I'm thinking that maybe it's an advanced attack by aliens, that maybe the aliens that are planning to colonize the planet, you know, eat plastic. and they really need a lot of plastic to make it worthwhile. To make it worthwhile to come down,
like
to take over
crops.
The earth. Yeah, exactly. They're seeding. Seeding the
Does
earth.
Does that sign mean anything to you? That black
the
one?
LSD.
Yeah.
LSD?
The crop.
Latter-day Saints?
Yes.
Ah, yes.
LDS.
Oh, LDS, right.
Well, Kane knows a lot about that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's wow. an interesting story.
Well, that's a very interesting story.
Do you know that story?
The founding. Yeah, the founding of the Mormons.
Of the Mormon Church.
Oh, I love the cloud of locusts. And, you know, that descended on their crops, and then they prayed and the seagull showed up.
Which is very similar to the aliens polluting us with plastic.
That's right.
So then they could show up.
But I love and the fact that they have, a gold seagull on a Doric column in the back of the LDS church there. Or the tabernacle, excuse me.
Does this bring
I don't know much about it, however, our friend.
I love that.
I just mentioned something before, but I'm sure I never told you because I really never talked about it at all. But when I was a child, my family was Mormon. When I was like 6, 7, 8 years old.
All right.
And
That wasn't
went
in your book,
church.
Was it?
No.
Ah.
Because, you know.
Okay.
We're here on the Fangoria Podcast
Network.
The doc,
right.
And because I just never talked about it because I never felt like I was Mormon, but. I was actually baptized Mormon and when I was just a kid. And shortly after that, my family, grew away from the church and we realized it wasn't for us. But yeah, I've never really.
And now you're Scientologists?
No, I am converted Jewish to marry my wife. But I went from basically nothing, no religion as an adult. To something. So to me, it wasn't a big deal. Judaism has a lot of things that I admire, so I was fine with doing that.
That's cool.
That is. That's nice.
Yeah, I was born and raised a Christian Scientist.
Really?
So
wow.
Now that we're really, letting it all hang out.
And
really?
We both went on to play horribly. Violent,
psychotic.
Murderous, psychotic.
Well, like, do you think
character.
Otis is a Christian Scientist?
I don't think
as well?
So. No, I don't believe so.
No, I don't think
but,
so.
By the way, do you credit the Sugar Freak for any of your Chop Top performance?
I always do, yes. John Wright, WRIGHT. He contacted me because I'd always mentioned his name, and he contacted me on Facebook 10, 15 years ago.
Wow.
And I love the guy. I thought he was awesome.
And how do you know it was sugar and not just psychosis?
It might have been. I think he went on to have some substance abuse problems.
Wow.
And a lot of times sugar is a good, is a tip off.
Oh, is that right?
Really?
Sugar
is just such a crazy hardcore drug that people don't realize. Like, if you're a little baby getting circumcised, they give you lidocaine, right? They literally put lidocaine, which is sugar, in a little pacifier.
Yeah.
And it just the instant euphoria. They're just
the sugars.
You're getting
that
right?
detrimental.
Like it's a sugar dipped lidocaine.
Well, the
like,
moil. Yeah, the moil. Yo.
And they just get euphoric. I mean, they're chopping something off an infant.
Yeah.
And
I know.
They don't, they just.
They chopped mine off. I it was funny.
Last week.
I had a friend.
I was there.
I had a friend who, whose son was about, was recently born, was actually facing that possibility. And he said, well, what do I do? Do I, to have it, to leave it? Do I have it taken off? I don't know really what to do. And I said, he asked me for advice. Me. I don't know why he asked me for advice.
Well, you are chop.
But
top.
I said, and chop bottom. But I said, I only had the only advice I can give you is dick like dads.
And that's good advice.
He said, that's awesome. That's great. Okay.
DLD.
That's what we did in my house. We couldn't decide. Yeah. And my husband said, but it has to be you. You don't want your child to feel as though they're an outcast, even in school. It is common. Yeah. We're not.
I think it's whatever you want to do with your penises out there. Have
do whatever
at it.
You want.
Yeah.
But it's funny.
Any of us think that we have some massive divine purpose on this planet? Like, are we supposed to be here? Did it just happen? Did just two people have sex and then it became us? Or is are we specifically
six
hand-picked?
People had sex and went for me to be born. There was a lot of sex.
There was so much sex for you.
Upstairs, downstairs. In the U-Haul. There was sex all over the place.
I personally don't feel there's any divine purpose, if that's what you want to use the term. Or even a purpose on the planet. I don't know. It just, we're here.
Haven't you read the Talmud, man?
Does there have to be a purpose for us to be
on? I don't know if there's a purpose. Maybe not to be on the planet, but like, so you're here. Do you have a mission before you die that you need to get done? Or is it just be a good person and don't be a total asshole?
I think it's eternal. I don't know. I think it's just an ongoing, if you believe in that, I certainly do. Maybe I just want to believe that. We reincarnate and travel with other souls. I don't know. I'm going to continue my educating myself, let's say.
Sure.
I enjoy this topic very much, and I think it's interesting. We don't know. So just having the faith that that's a possibility, maybe it's just keeping me happy in believing that. It's comforting. Yeah.
Well, I just found this is a weird, interesting topic for people that have killed and been killed so many times in horror movies that, like, right. Is it something you ever has ever crossed your mind?
That we were put here to kill people in horror movies?
Maybe.
Well, I know I was.
Oh, well, that's good. If you believe in magic, come along with me.
We answered the question number two was, can you sing? And we know Bill Moseley can sing.
That's fairly obvious. Yeah. The answer is no.
Very obvious. We actually had a weird question yesterday. Was if you were offered to taste a sample of human flesh for $100,000, would you do it? And it has to be like a little ounce.
This is a real answer, not a joke.
A real question.
I would if it were in kind of a like a sushi.
That's how I pictured it.
I don't want it cooked. I don't necessarily need it off the campfire. But if it were in like, you know, wrapped in a little bit of...
So it has to be pretty?
Some seaweed and a little bit of rice.
You would just eat
with some wasabi.
Like a one-by-one chunk.
Yes.
Sure.
You guys are nuts. Me and Kane? No. Yeah.
I knew that. Yeah. I said yes as well. Yeah. I wouldn't now ask him the other question about the tank and the sharks.
Well, I think you would. Like would you go into a shark tank in the Galapagos Islands?
In a shark
tank. In a cage and go down with all the sharks?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think most of us would be like, maybe. But
I
the human
no
flesh,
to that.
Like, you don't think that part of you might be like, well, that's pretty good.
Because I wouldn't mess with the sharks. I wouldn't provoke them. So, I wouldn't be tapping on the cage or staring them down.
But
or like,
if you and I were
you
in there, I would be fucking with them, trying to get them to get enraged.
Yeah.
Just to make the experience.
And why the Galapagos?
I don't know.
There's a shit ton of sharks there.
Well, there's sharks everywhere.
Everywhere.
Yeah, but there's like... Oh,
what about Coolum Beach in Queensland, Australia?
Have you been there?
Yeah.
Is there tons of sharks?
No, I didn't see any. But I just like... If we're picking places, I like that place.
How about Chappaqua?
Kane and I were both there and staying in an awesome...
Wait, was this for Boar?
No, for Charlie's Farm.
First.
Were you both in Boar? Am I that wrong?
He was.
I was, yes. But
they were done with me by then.
Yeah. They had had it.
When did you do Charlie's Farm?
We did that about 4 years ago.
Or more, I think.
Was it? Was it 2015, maybe? Or...
You and I did another movie together.
What?
God Killer.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
What have you done?
Tying into God, right. The God episode.
That was like a cartoon.
It's a cartoon.
Right.
A cartoon called God Killer.
Wow. Completely forgot
and
about
was
that.
Was he the one? Was he the
I don't know. I don't actually remember. I played a character named Angel Fuck.
Oh, why am I not surprised?
Angel Fuck awesome. And Danielle Harris and you and Lance Henriksen.
Wow. Oh, that's right.
Because I just I don't remember that so much as I remember like the t-shirt we all like posed in t-shirts.
We all had t-shirt poses and
Angel Fuck.
Yeah.
And I remember when I first went in to do the voiceover for it, I had like this really like for in my head, I thought Angel Fuck would talk like this. And they're like, why are you doing that voice?
You were doing vampires.
Like, why are you doing that? And I was like, what is supposed to be? And they're like, no, just talk. Just be you. And I was like, oh, all right. I guess Angel Fuck talks like this. Like,
oh, that's all awesome. Right.
Why you would think Angel Fuck would have that raspy,
dirty voice.
Well,
I like that. I prefer the raspy, dirty voice.
It's character.
For the character.
Yeah, Angel Fuck. I guess the name is
Angel Fuck. Yeah. There has to be something there.
Not it can't just be a sweet voice.
No. Yeah.
No, that's...
And you're picking feathers out of your mouth.
Right there, I'm an Angel Fuckette.
Like, right.
She was talking like that.
Well, that's not Angel eye fucking. That's just an angel.
Angel.
You've been fucked. So many movies you've done. Is there something on the agenda that you want to play? So, I mean, you kind of got to play a bunch of the coolest characters of all time. But Otis is such a Manson-like figure. Is there somebody out there that you want to portray that you haven't gotten a chance to do?
Well, Edgar in King Lear, of course. Really, I would have to say I don't really have a character in mind other than him. Poor Tom's a cold. King Lear's crazy, pal. Actually, I would love to work with, a project that didn't come to pass, at least as of yet, that I really wanted to be a part of was when Guillermo del Toro was going to do At the Mountains of Madness, the H.P. Lovecraft story, set, when it was actually set, which is the 1930s. It's about an Antarctic expedition that discovers Cthulhu, all kinds of different crazy characters in an Antarctic expedition. And Guillermo had written a script on it. James Cameron was going to produce it. Wow. So it was going to be like $100 million epic, amazing production. And I wanted to be so much a part of that. But then Guillermo, they backed off. They couldn't get a deal. They backed off because they thought that Prometheus, the Aliens movie, had too much in common with what they had in mind. But I didn't see it. I still think they could do an amazing At the Mountains of Madness. Also, there are a couple of directors that I would love to work with. I love Panos Cosmatos, who did that fabulous movie Mandy, which I thought was fucking awesome. Also Ari Aster. So there are some, young up and coming horror directors, new voices, new ways of doing things that, that I would certainly love to be working with. I would love to work with Kane on my special reworking of The Brain That Wouldn't Die. We could do a good job, man.
Oh, yeah.
I'm telling you, I have a funny, anyway.
We'll talk later.
That's another show.
But, so there are, in terms of roles to play, I'm not so sure. Show me one, I'm happy to play it. But those are some of my, kind of fantasy jobs. And also, there's a great Japanese director, Sion Sono. Love to work with him, Takashi Miike, of course. So there's still lots of cool stuff out there.
Absolutely. Definitely. Yeah. Well, we know we haven't seen the last of you at all. You're always around we're super excited
and
about it.
And you look about 23.
You look about 23. Yeah. But I had one more question to ask you guys. Bigfoot, Loch Ness, are they real?
I'd have to laugh. I say no.
No?
No.
No?
No.
I say, why not? I would rather they existed than they didn't exist.
I'm telling you,
it would be
super cool,
but
because there's the Lake Champlain monster too. Which is very similar to a Loch Ness monster, kind of a plesiosaurus or something, from the good old days of dinosaurs.
Has that weird long neck?
I believe
in them, and that they may be gone now, somebody captured that shit and has it in their weird cabin somewhere.
Yeah.
But I do believe they might have existed at one point.
Okay.
And Bigfoot, I love the idea of going to the Dells in Oregon, where there's no one's gone some all the way in there. There's
big hairy dick dude.
Yeah, big hairy dick dude.
Just hanging out in the Dells.
Hanging out in the Dells.
It would be cool if it existed.
Definitely.
I think next season of Casualty Friday, we go on a hunt for Bigfoot, Loch Ness, the Mole People.
The Mole People. It's one of my favorite movies.
So cool. And check out the slaughtered the slaughter,
the cattle mutilation,
the cattle mutilation,
the mutes.
That seems to have gone by the wayside, that whole mythology.
Well, you know, it was so funny because a lot of people were trying to figure out just who was mutilating the cows. And at first there was it moon moans? Was it satanic cults, you know, trying to gather blood or do some kind of crazy stuff on the full moon? And the answer is no, because they would have left footprints, and there were no footprints. And they would have, you know, hacked that. They wouldn't have done the surgical precision. They wouldn't have been able to pump all the blood out of the animal.
Aliens.
Yeah, that's really what it comes down to. Also, not only that, but the mutilated carcasses then repelled predators.
What?
So you have a dead cow lying on the range. Right. You're going to have like wolves, coyotes, all kinds of, you know, magpies, badgers, whatever else is going to eat on them. And you could see footprints like 30 feet, away from the carcass, but no closer. Mm. Like they knew they wanted it, but they knew something was funky.
Something was wrong with it.
And so somebody wrote into a secret witness column of the Denver Post many years ago and said it's farmers from another solar system, which I kind of like. I thought that was kind of a romantic title. Farmers from another solar system. And what they're doing is they're taking these particular organs and blood from the cows, because cows are have a sensitive physiology that's very similar to humans when it comes to radiation. And that what happens is they take these space folk take these organs to test how much radiation there is, how contaminated our planet is. Because as you recall, when the Chinese did an atmospheric nuclear test, the way we figured out how big it was or how dirty it was when the clouds came across the Pacific and there was rain in Pennsylvania, and the rain was collected, and they could find out just by taking a Geiger counter to the raindrops, like how much radiation there was. And so these cows are a great standard for, and that was basically the gist of it, that the aliens were checking out to see just how far gone we are. And I thought that was actually the best explanation.
That's
because it ain't the military, because, you know, that's humans, and there's, you know, somebody's going to screw up, the helicopter's going to crash.
And somebody would have saw it.
Somebody's going to talk.
And somebody's going to talk. You know, years later, you know, too many drinks at the bar. Like, I remember when we mutilated those cows. I just can't stand it. I can't
live
with myself.
And the precision on it. Like, how could you do that out in the open without people taking notice? Like, that's...
And one of them was mutilated literally in a corral outside a farmer's house while the farmer, his family, and their Doberman Pinscher slept through it. So that tells me that ain't no military operation. And it ain't a bunch of, Satan cult people. You know, it's got to be
cult people.
That's like some Mysterians, you know, where they lift the cow up with a tractor beam and they do all their stuff, and then they, you know, gently lower it all drained and surgically
oh
removed.
Oh, my God. Well, that's insane. Anyway. Just like this episode, the craziest, the wildest, the most bizarre episode we've had on Casualty Friday.
Absolutely.
And you can tweet us about what you believe, what you think, and how you feel
are
about this episode.
Real? Like, Fangoria Podcast Network, Bill Moseley, Chop Top, Otis, Three from Hell, very good friend of the show. We're super, super happy that you were able to come by.
Thank you so much.
Listen to our crazy nonsense. And
it was wonderful.
And on that note, let's kill Bill.
Let's kill Bill.
That's cornbugs again.
That's a corn bug song.
Kill Bill.
Kill Bill. Bill. Now that we've sufficiently mutilated our careers and Bill Moseley, catch us next time. Same place, same horrific conversations. Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network.
Casualty Friday is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, hosted and produced by Tiffany Shepis, Felissa Rose, and Kane Hodder. Executive producers Dallas Saunier, Phil Nobile Jr., Matt Mangiarides, and Justin Martel. Produced by Natasha Pasetta. Associate producer Jessica Safa-Vamare. Art and design by Jason Koslerich. Sound recording and mixing by Ernesto Hurtado at Rebel Talk Network in Los Angeles. Music by John Brennan. For Fangoria, Brandon Wynardi, Rachel Wilson, Brandon Jones, Rob Galuzzo, James Wallace, Monique Jacques, Rock and Anfernee Bonds.